relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
You're listening to America First with Dr. G.
What is it with these liberals who have no stamina and they just don't come up with good stuff? What? Hey, Jeff, what was that guy's name? What was his fake name who took in the break?
His name was John.
John. And they're such cowards. So tough over the phone. But when they're in front of you, they're little boys. Little boys. John, I laugh in your face. All right, guys, if you haven't done so already, join us for our trip of the lifetime. We're going to the Holy Land with the man. We've got to talk about 2,000 Mules. Dan Bongino spoke about it for hours today. We're going to discuss it. But the director of that incredible movie will be joining us for our Stand With Israel tour, 10 days in the Holy Land. Come on, guys, you know you want to come with me, Dinesh, and his lovely wife, Debbie. 10 days in the Holy Land to walk where our Lord and Savior walked the earth. Reserve your tickets today. Call 855-565-5519 or just go to standwithisraeltour.com. Even if you've been to the Holy Land before, you haven't been with me and Dinesh. That's 855-565-5519 or just go to standwithisraeltour.com. Okay, we've got to talk about what's happened not only outside the homes of the justices, but why it happened and what's in that leaked decision document. We have somebody who I trust for legal advice, who's worked in the Trump administration at the DOJ, practicing lawyer, Breitbart contributor. You've got to read his latest pieces at Breitbart.com. He's Ken Klukowski. Ken, welcome back to America First.
Great to be with you, Seb. Thanks for having me.
All right. I'm going to just say what I think about the Supreme Court draft decision, because I'm not a lawyer, but I read all 70 pages recently. And you know what shocked me? And maybe I should read more of these documents. It was a fabulous historic tour d'horizon. It was a treatise. It wasn't full of mumbo jumbo that a layman couldn't understand. First, it was this amazing historic review of how the law treated abortion in Western civilization, going back to the 17th century in the UK, the concept of quickening, and then basically this conclusion that until Roe v. Wade, it was illegal in America. And then it was a segment by segment dismantling of both Roe and Casey, saying it's just bad law, and analyzing stare decisis and other concepts. So, Ken, give me your legal professional opinion. Is this an unusually good pre-decisional draft, or is this because it's Alito who's writing it?
It's well, first of all, Justice Alito is a brilliant justice. His opinions are uniformly wonderful. But what you just described, and as I read it as well, it reminds me of the late Justice Scalia's opinion in District of Columbia versus Heller, which held that the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms is an individual right from 2008. That opinion was also almost exactly the same page length. That was a little over 60 pages. And what you saw there is what a well-written Supreme Court opinion is supposed to look like. This is an originalist decision, one that looks to the text, structure, and history of the Constitution. And in this case, in terms of looking at the history of a purported right to abortion, showing why this is in fact not a right found in the U.S. Constitution.
And then there's this fascinating moment where they jump from Roe to Casey, and they say that in Casey, they don't even try and argue what they said in Roe, the penumbra and everything else, and they know it's a garbage argument, so they go to the 14th Amendment. And even then, Alito says, well, I'm sorry, the 14th Amendment is clear that you've got to have some established tradition that accrues or connects to that right. And there is no established tradition in the Western canon of abortion. So even the Casey case is torn apart.
Yeah, I'll answer both parts of that. First, from Roe to Casey. You're right. Roe was a horribly written opinion. Arguably, there's not a single paragraph in that opinion that is actual legal reasoning, where you unpack the law and then apply it to facts. You get philosophical musings in there. They talk about ancient Greece and whatnot, stuff that has nothing to do with how you interpret the American Constitution. Yes. And so when the court in 1992, by a 5-4 vote, it chose not to overrule Roe v. Wade, which was from 1973, the court threw out everything in Roe, its trimester framework and all of this other stuff it had done, because Roe was just an embarrassing
Let me. I forgot to mention, yeah. And the trimester framework was just cut from whole cloth. They made up this trimester framework where the state has an interest, the state doesn't have an interest, and there was no legal justification. They just made it up.
That's right. That was Justice Blackmun, who said, looking back on his life, that he would rather have gone to med school than to law school. And so, you know, read into that what you will. But that's right. Understanding that that was a legally indefensible framework, they threw that out. And then Casey brought in what was a viability standard, that instead of three parts of a pregnancy, there's only two. There is before a child is viable outside the womb, and then after it's viable, and the issue of whether something is an undue burden on a woman seeking an abortion before viability. But that too proved to be a completely unworkable framework, and that was a big part of Justice Alito's opinion here. But to shift gears into the test that he applied then, the Supreme Court has developed for almost a century a framework for how you identify fundamental rights and how you also identify what are called implied rights, constitutional rights that are not found in the actual text of the Constitution, such as the right to have children, for example, or the right to be able to determine the educational upbringing of your children.
Or to marry somebody from another race.
Yeah, that's right. Though I'll tell you, with interracial marriage, that's Loving v. Virginia from 1967, that runs square long into an explicit provision in the Constitution, and that is the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. And the Equal Protection Clause, ratified in 1868, its central purpose was to eradicate state laws that discriminated on the basis of race. And so I would say Loving is firmly rooted as an equal protection case, to say that it is a textbook example of the kind of law that the 14th Amendment Equal Protection Clause does not allow. But in terms of rights that they try and cram into the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment, there's a two-part test. One is whether it is, and this is what you alluded to, whether it is deeply rooted in the history and tradition of the American people, right, meaning that pretty much we recognized that right in 1789 when the Constitution was adopted, and we have uniformly recognized it back from that time to the present.
Like interstate travel. There's no argument right. Whether Americans can travel between their states, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that is a right protected by what's called the Privileges or Immunities Clause of the 14th Amendment. The second half being whether the right is implicit in the concept of ordered liberty.
Right, that is a big, big concept. We need to unpack this crucial phrase, ordered liberty. None better to do it for us than Ken Kuklowski. Read his articles at Breitbart.com, former DOJ lawyer, former Trump administration. This is America First on the Salem Radio Network. Wherever you are, don't you dare touch that dial.
Portions of America First are brought to you in part by Stand With Israel Tour.
Not that the FBI is even sniffing and looking, Yeah. But what if somebody came in and said, you know what, we are going to subpoena all his account records and this and that, and then all of a sudden we make the news. So it's a more of a reputation risk.
Yeah, your reputation. The vice president of Heartland Financial, the bank that closed down nine of Mike Lindell's bank accounts. Why? Because he's a criminal? No, because he's a conservative. That's how much they want to cancel that patriot. Let's show him that we have his back. He's a friend of the president. He's a great, great American. Support him today. Use my name. Go to his website and he'll give you up to 66% off his more than 150 amazing products. Not just the MyPillow, the pillow that never loses shape, never gets hot, more than 51 million sold, whether it's the silk sheets, the pajamas, whether it's the mattress toppers, the sheepskin slippers. Check out all of his amazing products. MyPillow.com, promo code G-O-R-K-A, or call 800-829-8468. MyPillow.com, promo code Gorka. We are back with Ken Klukowski, a man who we rely upon for our legal advice here in America First. We're talking about the Supreme Court decision. What happens now, Ken? I've heard a lot of theories that the left screwed up here. They should have waited till June, then the nuclear bomb effect of this dropping in June closer to the elections would have been more useful to them. I've heard theories today that now nobody can back down. The five justices cannot back down because then it would make them look as if they were weak and gave in to the mob. You've been watching the Supreme Court for years now. This is truly unprecedented in the modern age. So what kind of scenarios are we looking at until June and the official the vote?
Well, for one thing, Seb, I'll be putting an article up today urging the justices to get the opinion out as quickly as possible. I mean, the draft that we saw was from February 10.
Yeah.
They would have continued to polish it and edit it since that time. So I think the opinion could be in good condition to actually be issued as is right now, as in like this week. Now, if there are other justices who are still writing concurring opinions or dissenting opinions, none of those have the force of law, and they can just issue that whenever they're ready to do so. But the justices in the majority have the authority whenever they vote to do it to just go ahead and release the opinion. And I would recommend doing so as quickly as possible. So that we can all move forward, so that this is an official opinion. It's on the clock. It's in the books. And let me segue straight from that to another point you mentioned, and that is that, yes, I believe that every day, every additional day that transpires between this decision becoming official and November's election day is that tens of millions of Americans are going to realize that the left has lied to them for half a century about what the effect of overruling Roe would be. All of the sudden, people are going to find out that the abortion laws where they're at either exactly match what their values are on abortion. So in pro-life states, you could have pro-life laws. In pro-abortion states, abortion would still be widespread and legal. And since there is a constitutional right to interstate travel, if you live in a pro-life state, and you're right next to a pro-abortion state, well, if you're willing to drive 3 or 4 hours, you can still get an abortion. How many abortions do you plan on getting in your life that would be some sort of incredible burden on you?
So I need you to help clarify something for me, because, again, it's been misrepresented that this is some, you know, one justice writing his opinion. No. It's not one justice writing his opinion. This is the first draft of the Supreme Court of the United States as their decision in the majority. And here, the last page is crucial. It's not one person's opinion. It's, quote, we now overrule Roe and Casey and return these authorities to the people and their elected representatives. The judgment of the Fifth Court is reversed. It is so ordered, are the last words. This isn't just one man's opinion, is it, Ken?
Well, that's right. The way this works is when you have oral arguments at the Supreme Court, then on the Friday of that week, The justices have a closed-door conference. There's only nine people in the room, only the justices. In fact, if someone has a note or whatever, the junior justice has the job. If someone knocks at the door to go answer the door, the junior justice also has to serve coffee and water. And so right now that would be, for at least the next couple months, that would still be Justice Barrett.
Yes.
But at those conferences, they each go around with cases that were argued. And starting with the chief and going down in order of seniority, he just gives his take on how the case should be decided and casts his vote. Once you get down to the ninth justice, you know what the vote is. And then the senior most justice in the majority then assigns the opinion to someone in the majority, including himself. And then that person starts drafting a draft decision that represents the views of the five or more justices the majority.
We're out of time. We need to continue this. Let's get him in studio for a whole hour. Follow him, Ken Klukowski, and his latest articles at Breitbart.com. Thank you so much, Ken. This is America First. More legal updates. What's happening to the January 6th political prisoners? Coming to you live from the ReliefFactor.com studios. Are you in daily pain? Have you tried everything else only to fail to find relief? If that's the case, you've got to try this 100% drug-free product that is liberating tens of thousands of Americans across the country, me included. Order the three-week quick starter pack right now. Call 800-500-8384, ReliefFactor.com. That's 800-500-8384, ReliefFactor.com.
America First.
Can you believe it? They are saying that they don't agree with America First. How do you say that?
Magnificent.
Do you want the good news or the bad news? Let's start with the good news. Governor DeSantis is declaring November the 7th as Victims of Communism Day so that Florida schools will teach the destructive effects of communism around the world. Bad news. It's not a joke. This is breaking news. Mr. G just sent me this. The Washington Post has won the Pulitzer Prize. I hope Pulitzer's spinning in his grave. For public service coverage of January 6th. I bet our next guest has something to say about that. But first, if you haven't done so, it is breaking records. It is melting down the internet, even though Facebook and the fact checkers are trying to shut it down. You have got to see Dinesh's movie, 2,000 Mules. This is it. Bang to rights. All the evidence you need of how they stole the election. I'm in it. Dennis Prager, Larry Elder, Charlie Kirk, Eric Metaxas. We've seen the evidence. More than 400,000 ballots illegally harvested. You've got to see it to understand the threat to the Republic. I'm so, so excited. I've got a stake in this movie because it is that serious. Watch it today, salemnow.com. It is 2,000 Mules. It is changing politics in America forever. That is salemnow.com, 2,000 Mules. Okay, let's go to a lady who I'm sure has something to say about that breaking news. Senior writer at the superb American Greatness website, that is amgreatness.com. Julie Kelly, welcome back to America First.
Thanks for having me. I wanted to say I concluded my lovely Mother's Day last night by watching 2,000 Mules. It is just mind-blowing. You cannot conceive that this happened in America that has been covered up this long. And I encourage anyone who has not yet seen it to take the hour and a half and sit down and watch it. I'm going to watch it again.
Good.
Because I'm sure I missed something, but great work there.
Thank you, Julie. SalemNow.com. Watch the movie, stream it, order the DVDs. You've got to watch it. Okay, so the Washington Post gets a Pulitzer for its coverage of January 6th. This weekend we saw, against federal code and against Virginia code, justices being harassed outside their homes. Nobody arrested, nobody charged with sedition and insurrection. Would you give us an update, Julie, on the latest developments with the political prisoners here in D.C.?
Yes. First, I want to say something about the Washington Post. Aside from all their hyperbolic coverage and editorializing, they did a three-part series about January 6th, which is a trove of little nuggets of information as to how certain lawmakers and officials in Washington, D.C., oddly knew so much ahead of time what was going to happen on January 6th. I've actually relied on that quite a bit. For example, Liz Cheney bringing a Secret Service agent, retired Secret Service agent, to the Capitol that day and some other tidbits.
Hang on. Liz Cheney had special protection on January the 6th. So how did she know?
Well, that's a great question no one will ask. But that was a little tidbit in the Washington Post extensive investigation into what happened before, during, and after. We also found out that Adam Kinzinger told his staff not to come in that day. And I believe there are reports that he brought a firearm. I believe that that's what the Washington Post in this series covered. There's a lot of...
Hang on. Adam Kinzinger brought a firearm?
That is what I recall being reported by the Washington Post in that series.
Isn't that interesting? All right.
Isn't it?
It is. Talk to us about what's happening to those who are imprisoned in D.C., Julie.
So we are now going on 14 months incarceration for several defendants as DOJ, with the consent of federal judges, including Trump-appointed judges like Timothy Kelly, continue to let DOJ delay trials, withhold evidence, delay discovery evidence such as FBI files, et cetera. We are now going to see more. Some of the major trials have been moved to late summer, fall of 2022, which means some of these men will be incarcerated 18 months, not convicted of any crime, most of whom have no criminal records, a number of whom are also veterans, being politically persecuted by the DOJ and D.C. District Court. So all of this coincides with, you know, voting in the midterm elections, and also coincides with the January 6th Select Committee public hearings and report, et cetera. So these are political prisoners. There's no doubt about it. These judges continue to allow these men to be held without any convictions. And, of course, the craven Republican leadership continues to be completely silent about this.
Yeah. Follow this lady right now, Julie_Kelly2. Read her articles at amgreatness.com. That's Julie_Kelly2. Tell us about the other individuals still caught up, the two charged individuals still caught up in the collapsing Whitmer kidnap case.
I spoke with one of them today. So two, of course, this was the largest domestic terror investigation by DOJ until January 6th. On April 8th, a Michigan jury acquitted two men. The other two men, including the alleged ringleader, was met with a hung jury. Here we are now, then 30 days later, DOJ threatened to refile charges. They still haven't. The two men still remain in prison, waiting for DOJ to figure out what they want to do. I talked to one of the men today, Brandon Caserta, who was acquitted. I will have a very extensive article on him later this week. What these people have gone through, what they continue to go through. So Christopher Wray and the DOJ, including William Barr, he was the AG at the time, helped concoct this FBI kidnapping plot to support this phony narrative that we heard from Joe Biden again last week, that the MAGA movement, that white supremacists, right-wing militiamen, et cetera, pose the gravest threat to the homeland. We know that that is not true, but they concocted this plot. Numerous FBI agents, undercover agents, informants working out of numerous FBI field offices with highest approval by the FBI and DOJ to put this plot together. It has been a complete disaster and failure. And again, Seb, have you been reading about this in the award-winning Washington Post? Have they been covering
this? No, I didn't see anything on CNN Plus, or what was it, Chuck Todd, who's now having his show canceled on cable and it's going on to their streaming service. I didn't see Chuck Todd cover it either, but that's why we have you. God bless you for doing what you do. I can't keep up with your Twitter feed. You are breaking more news by yourself than the rest of the lying legacy media. And thanks to Chris Buskirk and Ben at American Greatness for giving you that superlative platform. Read all of her breaking coverage at Julie_Kelly2 and amgreatness.com. Keep doing what you do. Guys, the call board is full. Please don't go anywhere. Dave, Judy, Brent, Victor, Phil, I'll take your calls in the next segment, and we'll open the second hour with your calls because you guys are so very, very important. Now that DHS has created a government body to combat disinformation. Your freedom of speech is more important than ever. That's why I've switched from Verizon to Patriot Mobile after they subpoenaed my phone records for Nancy Pelosi's Star Chamber. It's the only Christian conservative cell phone company in America. You can switch today. They have the same nationwide coverage with the same cell phone towers, but they're on your side. You can keep your number. Call today, 972-PATRIOT. Use promo code G-O-R-K-A for free activation. They stand up for veterans, first responders, the U.S. Constitution, special discounts for veterans and first responders. Go today, patriotmobile.com/GORKA or 972-PATRIOT. That's 972-728-7468. You've got to use promo code GORKA or just go to patriotmobile.com/GORKA.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
Welcome back, dear friends. If you haven't done so already, please book your tickets to join me and Dinesh D'Souza, the guy, you know, who made 2,000 mules, is coming with me, along with his wife, Debbie, to the Holy Land for our Stand With Israel tour. Call today, 855-565-5519. We're going to walk where our Lord and Savior walked the earth. Even if you've been to Israel, you haven't been with me and Dinesh. The trip of a lifetime. It's not about what you accrue. It's about the memories. Come on, guys. 855-565-5519. You know you want to join us. I'm not vaccinated, and I'm going. StandWithIsraelTour.com. StandWithIsraelTour.com. He comes in my studio, and he wants to play with all of my toys, and he walks over to my Shakespeare bust. Put that camera on. Camera two. What have we got here? We've got the bust from, yes, the original Batman movie with the switch that lets you go down into the Batcave. We've got all of our Doctor Who paraphernalia. We've got the hotline because they don't trust Biden. We've got the hotline phone right here as well on the table. He's a man who knows what all this means. He's got a good sense of humor and he understands national security. The perfect guest to discuss Victory Day. He is none other than former Secretary of Veterans Affairs in the Trump administration, Secretary Robert Wilkie. Welcome back in studio.
Good to see you, Doctor.
So you watched a bit of the parade?
I watched almost all of it.
Okay, so tell us what we should know. We've had a lot of events occurring in Warsaw. The Russian ambassador was pelted with red paint for blood. A lot of people, trolls on the social media all day, trying to forget the Molotov-Ribbentrop pact, the pact between Nazi Germany and the Soviets, which I'm sure Putin would like to forget, given that this is the narrative he's using.
By the way, which gave the Soviet Union cover to invade Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania.
Exactly. Right. So talk to us about what conclusions we should draw from the parade and the narrative being used by this Russian Federation.
Well, let's talk about the military side. A very subdued parade. No new equipment. In fact, they only paraded one T-34. And I was thinking, and this was the main Soviet battle tank in World War II, I was thinking they're taking the other ones out of the museums because the Ukrainians have killed.
Right.
Very, very little in terms of military systems being paraded. No planes flying over. The line coming out of Moscow was that it was bad weather. It was beautiful.
It was beautiful. Right? It was a completely clear day.
It was a clear day, clear sky.
There's never a lack of aircraft.
Let me give you some statistics.
That's fascinating.
Some statistics that have been floating around Jerusalem that I found stunning today. He committed 70% of his conventional forces to Ukraine. He's lost 20% of that force. You cannot sustain a fight with losses of that level. And that is what is happening to him. He didn't mention Ukraine once in his remarks today. He mentioned Donbass. And then he did the typical Putin rewrite of Russian history that we stand against the Nazis. Oh, and by the way, in the Great Patriotic War, the British had a little to do with the victory over Hitler. he attacked the U.S. in an interesting way. He was playing on the issues, as I read them, of abortion, homosexual rights.
Hang on. The Victory Day celebrations. Yes. He's talking about abortion in America?
He's talking about America's decadence. And he didn't mention those things directly, but he was going around about the decadence of the United States and its threat to the historic religious values of the Russian nation.
As a KGB colonel.
KGB colonel. But he had the patriarchs of the Russian Orthodox Church sitting next to, they're actually to the side, in their traditional regalia. The only thing missing was Putin holding an icon and blessing, having them bless the icon.
Because they have bought on, they are in full support of his actions.
And they are on the payroll. I mean, this is a traditional Soviet trick that Putin learned from his masters, that you trot out the priest when it's needed. So Stalin certainly did that. And then at different times in the history of the Soviet Union, they were paraded out.
Well, people should understand that in the Orthodox system, there is, it's not a lack of, there is a denial of separation in church and state.
Yes.
At an Orthodox ceremony, the mayor will walk in along with the Orthodox priest at the beginning of Mass. So it is the antithesis of what we have here. So, you know, the state and the church is intertwined.
Yes, they are intertwined. Another thing happened that shows you just how weak Putin's infrastructure is. During the state broadcast, the state propaganda presentation, I'm guessing Ukrainian computer people hacked into the Russian television.
Really?
And when they put up the schedules sort of suddenly disappeared, and in its place was Russia is murdering thousands of children. Thousands
on
of women.
On the broadcast?
Right before the broadcast.
That's
fascinating stuff. Which also goes to something you and I talked about many weeks ago, that the Ukrainians have broken into all of the Russian communication nets. That's why it's been easy for them to find Russian generals, Russian admirals. They're killing them by the score. One last observation I had. Gerasimov, the head of the Russian army, not the gangster who pretends to be a soldier, the defense minister. My understanding from Israeli friends and British friends is that Gerasimov went to eastern Ukraine. He got down to the squad level in terms of his visits, unusual for a Russian general, and that he gave a report to Putin 2 days ago saying, you're in trouble. You're in deep trouble here.
So
we're losing.
With that in mind, I have to ask you your take on what clearly is the proximate objective of Russian forces. It is to connect Mariupol with Odessa and to landlock Ukraine,
right,
so that Ukraine's economy is just broken with an incapacity to export via shipping lanes.
Right.
Is that still possible or not? What are your friends?
Today it is not possible. They are actually beginning to witness a counteroffensive to push Russian forces out of that Mariupol-Odessa corridor. And the Russians are just holding on to their original conquests in eastern Ukraine, particularly in Donbass and Luhansk. It is a remarkable reversal, but it points to the corruption of the Russian system. There's no logistical tail to the Russian army. There is no notion of combined operations. You have oligarchs like the former owner of Chelsea Football Club, whose investments came from Russian tank factories. Well, he was just taking the money that he was supposed to spend on the tank factories, right, and investing it in soccer players and a very lavish lifestyle. But this is playing out all over Russia, and the entire facade is coming down.
He is former Secretary of Veterans Affairs, served in the Air Force, served in Naval Intelligence. He was responsible, the highest levels of the Pentagon, for readiness and personnel. Now he is senior national security expert contributor for Newsmax. You have got to follow his analysis on my show on Newsmax as well. He's Secretary Robert Wilkie. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. We'll be back to discuss what another former member of the Trump administration has just said. It's not good. We'll get his reaction here on the Salem Radio Network.
portions of America First are brought to you in part by Stand With Israel Tour.
How utterly embarrassing. Everybody's gone there. Baltic state leaders. Boris Johnson's gone there. Not president, but I still can't say that. The current incumbent of the White House has not gone to the Ukraine. He sent his wife, because he probably couldn't find his way to Air Force One. She went to Kiev, but not sleepy, creepy Biden. Let's tell the White House what we think of their policies. It's the most popular item on our website right now. It is the T-shirt that has Zelensky's response to Biden when he said, "You can run away from the Russians." He said, "I don't need a ride. I need ammunition." Get your T-shirts, get your MAGA gear, your Let's Go Brandon gear, sebgorkastore.com. That's S-E-B-G-O-R-K-A, sebgorkastore.com. Everything made in America. Tell the world who you are and what you think of the Biden White House. Okay, we are back with a member of the Trump administration, former Secretary of Veterans Affairs, Robert Wilkie. Another cabinet member was Mark Esper at the end of the Trump administration, Secretary of Defense, who is, I guess, trying to sell books or something about his strange way of running the Pentagon and not serving the President of the United States. Cut eight.
What kind of terrible things did you prevent?
At various times, during certainly the last year of the administration, you have folks in the White House are proposing to take military action against Venezuela, to strike Iran. At one point, somebody proposed we blockade Cuba. These ideas would happen. It seemed every few weeks, something like this would come up, and we'd have to swat them down.
Who's we had to swat them down?
Well, mostly me. I had good support from General Mark Milley.
Mark Esper and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, ran the Army for over a year before finding themselves in charge at the Pentagon. In order to deal with what he calls some of the crazy ideas coming from the White House, Esper and Milley came up with a system.
I come up with this idea. Actually, Mark Milley and I discuss it, what we call the four no's. The four things we had to prevent from happening between then and the election. And one was no strategic retreats, no unnecessary wars, no politicization of the military, and no misuse of the military.
An obvious question to you as a former cabinet member. Right. Did you see your job, as Mark Esper did, to prevent the man who was elected from doing what he wanted to do?
No, my job was to give the President of the United States my best advice by also carrying out his strategic vision, how to run Veterans Affairs. If you can't do that, then there is a way to address whatever problems you might have with the man who brought you to the cabinet table. And that's what my former boss, Secretary Mattis, did, which was resign.
So were you forced to become Secretary of Veterans Affairs? Were you press ganged? Did somebody say that you must do this?
No.
So and if you'd had a big issue, you could have left.
I could have left, could have raised it with the president and then left, could have raised it with the president, said I did my best. But this is an interesting phenomenon that is taking place. It usually strikes Republican administrations after the fact. Warriors who are claiming victory after they
leave office. Well, this is the peculiarity that to say after the fact, a year and a half later, this is how courageous I was. Well, surely the courageous thing is if you're in the position and you walk away from it, the prestige and everything else, and you stand up for what you believe, isn't that the mark of somebody with honor?
That's right. To raise the issue before the country, if you feel that
yes,
the country is
first in
danger.
Private.
Yes, and one of the things that you heard in that clip was talking about people asking about Cuba and Venezuela. The Pentagon has room after room full of contingency
yes.
plans. My friends in Canada, don't get alarmed. There's even a contingency plan in the State Department that was written during the time of the Quebec Troubles. What if Canada broke up? Do you bring Canadian provinces into the United States?
Don't get shocked, guys. Relax.
That's right. Yeah, no. It's just, I mean, we even heard that somebody wrote a contingency paper about aliens and zombies. And, of course, there's a contingency plan or set of plans for Cuba in the event that the Russians or the Chinese...
We're out of time, but one question. Is there something fundamentally wrong with the idea of using force against cartels in Mexico that have killed 100,000 Americans?
Oh, absolutely not. It is a national security threat, and it's one that President Trump took seriously. Right. It's one that we took seriously at the Pentagon.
Here's the dichotomy, dear friends, the idea that it's bad to strike cartels in Mexico killing Americans, but it's good to give the Russians intelligence to kill, to give the Ukrainians intelligence to kill Russian generals. That's the double standard. We need to get Robert back, Secretary Wilkie back for a whole hour. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. You know me, guys. I'm a skeptical chap. When somebody told me that you could lose your home and not even know it with title theft, I thought, really? I looked into it. It's true. It is more profitable now for cyber criminals than credit card fraud in America. All our titles are online. They can go in, remove you, put themselves on the title for your home, take out loans, and you're left carrying the bag. Find out if you're already a victim. Go to HomeTitleLock.com, plug in your address. They'll tell you if you've already been hacked. And if you haven't, they'll put a fence around your title and protect it. Protect the most valuable thing you own. Please, don't wait any longer. You don't want to find out too late. HomeTitleLock.com, but you've got to use the code GORKA for a special discount. Protect your most valuable asset. HomeTitleLock.com, code GORKA.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.